Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. We're here for Unspun episode 129. We're going to be discussing werewolves, witches, and vampires, mostly werewolves tonight. We're going to be tying it together with the previous shows on vampires that Caleb and I did, as well as the Salem and witchcraft shows that Holly and I have done for months back. And a lot of material to cover tonight, a lot of interesting tie-ins between vampires and werewolves and witches. And like usual, you know, the opposite of what we've been told is true. There's definitely some truth to the history of werewolves, not really how it's presented in the movies and Hollywood scene and all of that, but they're just like with vampires, there is underlying truth to the whole thing. Thank you, Anthony, for the $5 there. And just like we showed with the Salem Witch Trials and all of those shows that we've done this year, for those of you who want to go into the archives and check those out with Holly and I, you know, it shows that the witchcraft is real and that everything that we've been told about Salem and everything is spun the opposite. The Puritans were not Christians. The spell was cast against the Christians, and you find out that the only people who were put to death were those who denied being witches, etc. But so Caleb is back with me tonight. Welcome back, Caleb. And thanks to everyone who has supported the show. Thanks, Anthony. Somebody, Martin, sent me a letter this week with a check in it and wanting me to contact him. He included his email address and a website. I could barely read your handwriting, so I apologize for not getting back to you sooner. If you could write me back, because I couldn't read your email address, I would appreciate it, Martin. So thank you for that. And yes, Natty Nasty says, boycott Halloween, everyone. I agree with that. Halloween is a ritual where the Satanists and the witches and the vampires, etc., all mock our credulity and go about with our children, taking people up to doors, begging for candy, where they, you know, use the symbolism of the Puritan hat and the witch's cauldron, which is the symbol of how they made the poisons and things like that to create the plagues that they used to commit mass genocide with. So, you know, again, we've shown all of that history. So if you haven't seen the shows on Salem, obviously we did them throughout the year rather than this month, but it was just so much material that Holly and I went through. But check those shows out. And, you know, also study the shows that Caleb and I did last week on vampires that lead into this and show that all of this stuff is real. But what they taught us about something like dinosaurs, Caleb and I and Steven did a show on dinosaurs on Sunday showing how that's a hoax. So, you know, we were taught to believe in dinosaurs as kids, that those are real, but witches, vampires, and werewolves are fake. And so we've shown how the witches are real and all of that, and the vampires. So anyway, I'm going to pass it over to Caleb and let Caleb dig in with some of his research, and then we'll just pass it back and forth. Take it away, Caleb.
All right, so werewolves, what do we mean when we're talking about...
You know what? Hold on a second. I've got the audio set wrong. Sorry, folks. Good grief.
Check, check. Can you hear me?
That should be working now. Is that working for you guys? Do you hear me?
I can hear you fine, but
now I'm not hearing you, so that's not working great. Testing. Well, I'll just have to do it the other way, so sorry. Is that working? All right. Well, I'll just have to do it this way because I'm not hearing myself in the headphones, so something's going on with it. All right. We'll just keep going with it this way. Hopefully the audio isn't too messed up. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
All right. So, first thing I'd like to just kind of explain, give some grammar, start with some definitions.
I'd like to just get across what I mean, particularly when I'm talking about werewolves, to kind of differentiate these two different motifs that I found in my research. So there's a whole bunch of werewolves.
They say they can't hear you now. Shit. You know what? I probably was stupid and didn't plug my headphones in. That's what the problem was. Sorry, folks. Now you guys should be able to hear Caleb.
Caleb is low, they said.
All right, there you go. Now everything should be all right.
Is that better?
Yeah, okay. Sorry. When I plugged it in, my stupid headphones weren't plugged in. That's brilliant.
How's that, chat? Is that a little better?
I'm sure that's got to be perfect now.
Okay,
they
cool.
Say, okay, got it. All right.
So what I was saying was I think it's important to differentiate between some of the negatively portrayed wolf and where more of the man-wolf relationship that the northern tribes have had, specifically like the northern Slavs, the Scythians, the Goths, the Norse, Scandinavian, the Rus, the old tribes that were always associated in the north with the wolves. And they were always holding that as a spiritual animal and the relationship between the man and the wolf and the dog was a very tight notion. And we can begin to see, as I give some of this grammar, that that gets attacked in specific ways by groups that do not like these northern tribes. And you'll start to see the same ideas pop up from the past shows that we've been talking about, where Christians get attacked quite a bit as well. And that also ties the northern tribes together. If you're into the flamenco stuff with the new chronology and how he kind of talks about how all these Slavic, Scythian, Goths, the North Scandinavian, the Rus, these were actually Christian nations as opposed to the pagans that they portray them as. So that's interesting. On the other side of the coin is there's certain groups that will show were causing almost like the first false flags, if you want to put it that way, where they were dressing up like wolves and killing people. And for various notions, probably a lot of it had to do with fear, striking fear into people, blaming the people of the wolf. Probably was another reason why these things took place. A lot of times cannibalism and people probably on drugs. We'll get more into that. But just to kind of start with, I think it's interesting to talk about these cases in Germany and France in the around 1521 is when they start. And they go all the way to the 1700s, where you find these attacks being talked about in the newspapers and in the history of the medieval times. And we'll start to tie some of the reoccurring themes back full circle, so we can kind of get the bigger picture here and see what's really taking place. So in 1589 in Germany, the most famous werewolf trial on record is that of Peter Stump. He was a German farmer accused of werewolvery, along with witchcraft and cannibalism, known as the Werewolf of Bedbury. He confessed to multiple accounts of murder, rape, and cannibalism. It must be said that his confession came after being tortured, so we can't truly know for sure if he had committed such heinous crimes. He could have been mad or a delusional serial killer. Now, one interesting thing to note about this character when you're looking into this is that let me pull it up here.
I'm showing some stuff on screen, but yeah, I can switch for you there.
So this guy, let me see, Peter Stump here.
Well, while you got it.
Yeah, so Peter Stump So he says, so children began to disappear from their farms and homes. So again, we see the same thing we talked about with the vampires. It's these young children.
And the same thing in the Salem witch trials.
Yep. Young women vanished from the paths as they traveled daily. Some were found dead, horribly mutilated. Others were never found. The community was thrown into a panic. Hungry wolves were again suspected as the villagers armed themselves against the animals. So one interesting thing in the story, I can't read the whole entire thing, but one interesting thing in this case as well, although he did not literally transform into a wolf, Peter Stubb would cloak himself with the skin of a wolf when seeking his victims. Okay, so he's wearing a wolf skin. At his trial, Stubb confessed that the devil himself gave him the magic belt of wolf fur at age 12. And when he put it on, it transformed him.
And when you look into one of the ways to become a werewolf, it says you wear the belt made of human skin or created by a witch or whatever. And I think it's made of human skin.
Exactly. And one other reference that's interesting. He was a Protestant, right? So interesting that during all these religious wars, the Reformation, the period of the churches all splitting up, the Orthodox Church splitting into all these different denominations, we've linked this before, but a lot of the reformers and the Protestants, so when you think of Protestant, think of protest. These guys are protesters. They're protesting the original Orthodox Christianity, and they want to make it something different. And what they're making it into is more of very close to like a rabbinical Judaism type of Christianity. And a lot of the quote unquote Jews were a part of the Reformation, and they were on the protesting side. Think of E. Michael Jones's book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. It's this reoccurring thing that happens, the protesters, the revolving door of protesting for reform.
Revolution, that's a circle.
Exactly. So let's see, what else? Okay, so in France in 1521, Pierre Bergeau and Michael Verdun were two French peasants accused of killing and eating several men and women. Their trial received widespread notoriety. Historical records indicate that they were most likely a serial killer team.
And which one were they? Michael Verdun?
Michael Verdun and okay. Pierre Bergeau.
Yep. Right. Okay. Yep. I got them.
Hard to find a lot of information on these guys. There's not even a lot on Wikipedia and stuff, but there were some books written. A book was called Werewolves, Fable or Fiction by Michael Lynn. I found a little bit of references.
Somebody's
in there.
Saying they're not getting your... Oh, okay. Everybody else is saying it's fine. So somebody was saying they weren't getting your audio. That must have been back at the beginning for a minute.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know.
In the delay, they're probably watching it from the start or something. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, yeah, not a ton is known, but I do have some information on that. I'll have to possibly link that for people to look more into. And then there is in 1573 in France, Guy Garnier, known as the Werewolf of Dole, was a confessed serial killer. He had killed and eaten the flesh of several children. When on trial, he tried to put the blame on the devil. This didn't win him any favors, though, as he was burnt at the stake. And this guy's information is interesting. Let me screen share this so people can see.
Yeah, right. I want to go into some of these too. We should bounce back and forth. And oh, okay, I got that same article up on my side. So.
Yeah. So this guy's story is really super interesting as well. This all goes hand in hand, which we're going to talk about even further a little bit later. He was found guilty of lycanthropy and witchcraft. A lot of the same witchcraft stuff from Holly and Jan's work a lot of these motives pop up. Another thing that these guys and say, a lot of these guys say in their trials, is that they have a salve. They have some sort of a salve that they can put on. And I was kind of
highlight that where it says that.
I'll look for that.
You just you just had it a second ago. You were right over top of it, and you moved your page. Anyway, so, that's all right. So, go ahead.
So the salve is really interesting because one thing that you'll read about when you're interested in the werewolf phenomena, you'll read certain cases where I'll just read these two real quick. A recent theory has been proposed to explain werewolf episodes in Europe in the 18th and 19th century. Ergot, ding, 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 which causes a form of blood, of foodborne illness, is a fungus that grows in place of rye grain and the wet growing seasons after a very cold winter. Ergot poison usually affects whole towns and or least poor areas of towns and results in hallucinations, mass hysteria, paranoia, as well as convulsions and sometimes death. LSD can be derived from ergot. Ergot poisoning has been proposed as both a cause of individual believing that he or she is a werewolf and of a whole town believing that they had seen a werewolf. However, this theory is controversial. Okay, and the reason why I brought that up...
Let's kill the share on that, and let's both go into this some more.
The reason why I brought that up is because Jan was actually showing how in previous shows that the ergot was actually used in the as a scapegoat to kind of explain away a lot of the motifs that they were blaming witchcraft on, and it ended up being a little bit deeper. But I thought it was interesting that they're talking about salves, they're talking about mass hallucinations of these people thinking that they're werewolves. Could these salves be some right. sort of hallucinogen?
And you see the exact same pattern with the werewolves and with the vampires that we saw with the Salem witch trial stuff. You see them admitting that they're using salves. You see them admit that there were child killings and things like that, as if, you know, that stuff doesn't happen today, as if we don't have pedophiles and predators out there today, your Jeffrey Dahmers and whatnot out there today. But you see the same thing each time. These people will admit what they do, and then they spin it and blame the Christians as, you know, just, oh, well, you know, they were... you know, Christians. So therefore, you know, these poor, you know, these people, these were poor victims of Christian fanaticism. Right. And so, you know, this is the spin every single time, you know, Christians, they're just stupid. You know, they believe in truth is God, and we're just going to attack it and ridicule everything throughout the narrows. We're going to flip against Christians. So you see it with the Salem witch trials every single time. You see it. And never mind that the Puritans were Jewish. They were crypto-Jews. Puritan from Purim out of the Book of Esther, which I've been arguing for many months now, and I think that I have a lot of evidence to support that theory. But they were crypto-Jews, and then they would do this stuff, and they were, it was the Hebrew Republic of Massachusetts, if that doesn't tell you enough. And they followed the Tanakh, the first five books of the Old Testament, and they just put on a cloak of Christianity. And then whenever they did wrong, whenever they created a plague, whenever they massacred the Indians, the Christians took the blame for it. And then after the Puritans were done with all of this, they just quit being Puritans and they became Quakers and Congregationalists and Unitarians and whatnot. So then they just disappeared off and pretended, or they went back to being Jews and pretended that it was all the Puritans' fault. So they just erased the Puritans after the whole thing was over. And so, you know, we see the exact same thing happening. And I forget the woman now. Let me see. Ergot and Salem. But she, you know, and I have the book upstairs. So she writes this theory of Ergot in the Salem witch trials. And it's a total misdirection. And when you actually go in and you start mapping all of this stuff, let's see, ergotism. This might be it. Mary Kilborn Matossian. Yeah, that's her. So, you know, and this is from the Salem Museum in Salem, Massachusetts. This is up on the wall from her. And the theory is complete nonsense. It's one of the weakest theories I've seen, but it uses a lot of the same rhetoric. Oh, well, you know, they were victims of ergotism. And so the whole town, you know, it was ergot, and the whole town just, it was all their Christian fanaticism. And so we have to blame the Christians. And not only that, you know, they were suppressing the women. So they always throw in the feminist agenda. And, you know, there's actually a blueprint that I've laid out that they use for these attacks. So it's the exact same thing that they use with werewolves as well, create this false theory. With Salem, we discovered that it was mercury cinnabar. Cinnabar is mercury ore. And they would use this, and they would create poisons and potions. They would put it in the water supply, put it wherever. And this was how they were distributing this stuff. And through the underground tunnels that run all over the East Coast, the real underground railroads that they were actually trafficking humans through, too, including the slaves were going through there. It wasn't them just feeling the north side of the tree moss and going through the forest. That's nonsense. They were actual tunnels, actual underground railroads. And so all of this stuff is going on in Salem. But, you know, you have all of these, for lack of a better term, Satan worshipers, and they're doing these anti-Christian spells and blaming the Christians. And Cotton Mather was at least a self-proclaimed rabbi. And he wore a yarmulke, and, you know, that's cited in a number of books. And, you know, many of the other people in that whole region that were involved in this, it was a commonwealth. That's another name for communism. Communism, of course, is typically a Jewish thing, like, you know, from Karl Marx and many of the others. But so the ergot comes up from her, and I wouldn't be surprised if she was the one that put forth the werewolf ergot theory. Carl Ruck, years ago, whom I had on the show, he was episode number one, and I since figured out that he was working with the CIA with Gordon Wasson on MKUltra Subproject 58. But he wrote a book with, or not with Gordon Wasson, but he did actually write books with Gordon Wasson, excuse me. But this particular book, he wrote about 6 or 8 years ago, arguing that Amanita muscaria and some other drugs were probably involved in werewolfism. But as I go through all of this stuff, I am finding, and here's Carl Ruck here, I am finding that the ergot and whatnot is likely a cover-up for two other things. One we discussed last week, which is adrenochrome. And let me just get that up here. So here we have the adrenochrome thing again connecting to the werewolf lycanthropy issue here. And so with the vampires, like we discussed last week, we suspect that people were getting high by taking these drugs. It is a drug. They purify it, but it's the oxidase of adrenaline. And so when you drink somebody's blood filled with adrenaline because you're murdering them or bleeding them out, they freak out, and it creates a drug called adrenochrome, which is very similar in chemical makeup to mescaline. And it makes people go into a frenzy, which may be where the berserker craze that's supposedly attributed to the Norse, the Vikings, or whatever, which may be totally false, where that probably comes from. But that's probably where it comes from in vampirism, which I went through and read the Bible citations in the last two shows on this. So I recommend people checking out those shows, because I'm not going to go back through all those citations, all of the Old Testament citations about not drinking blood and why, and being banned. So you have these two opposing views, essentially, between the vampires and the werewolves. And Caleb has more on this to go into as well. But with the blood idea from the Bible, so the Bible says don't drink the blood. And then it also says you can eat any of the animals that are on your property or whatever. And so, But eating or drinking the blood is absolutely forbidden, because that is the life force. When the blood leaves, the creature dies. And so you cannot drink the blood, and you have to pour it out on the ground and bury it, cover it with dust or whatever, because that is the life force. And so the vampires, they just invert that, being the Satanists they are, and they say, ha ha, we're going to drink blood. Okay, so these are people that ritualistically drink blood, and they get high off of this stuff, and so they're getting high off of adrenochrome. Now, the other possible explanation, which I'm going to pull up here, is the Kuru virus, which is a disease that is caused by cannibalism. And, you know, so people with Kuru, they get mental disorders, their bodies tend to fail to function properly, etc. But that's a result of cannibalism. Some people have suggested that Hillary Clinton may have Kuru from all of this kind of stuff. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's what it was, but right now it's just speculation. They're not going to let us know, but Kuru is another definite possibility of the going crazy and kind of losing your brain on this sort of stuff. So you have these two things with adrenochrome that go into, you know, lycanthropy, into the berserkers, and Kuru, I should say, and they both associate with insanity. So vampirism goes to insanity as well. They get the, you know, the crave for the blood, etc. So we went into that in the last two shows, so check that out. But, you know, so as we get through these stories of the, oh goodness, now I've misplaced it, of lycanthropy and werewolves, we get into the history of Anubis, who is the Egyptian god who is like a dog. So, you know, that's the same sort of theme, the dog-headed man, the werewolf. And he ties over to Saturn, which is death. And then we get into cannibalism, which we've just mentioned with the Kuru. And so with Zeus, with the god Zeus, there's this guy Lycaon or Arcadia. And Zeus casts a spell on him or whatever and turns him into a wolf. The most popular version of the myth tested Zeus's omniscience by serving him with the roasted flesh of Lycaon's own son, Nicodemus, in order to see whether Zeus was truly all-knowing. In return for these gruesome deeds, Zeus transformed Lycaon into a wolf along with his offspring. Nicodemus was restored to life. So this is another theme where this originates, or, you know, and, you know, it depends on if, you know, Fomenko's timeline, which shows that this was probably all made up in medieval times and wasn't ancient at all as far as the stories of Zeus and whatnot. But, okay, so Caleb is going to, you know, Caleb talked about the northern Christian tribes, and we'll go into more on that as we go through. But, you know, here's a guy like Royal Society member Richard Cannibal Dawkins. He's been out there promoting cannibalism, which would be a means of werewolfism. Now, the difference between vampire, okay, so the Bible says you're not allowed to drink the blood. So the vampires say, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to drink the blood. And so they drink the blood. And so that's vampirism. But the werewolf, well, there's the flesh. And the werewolf is more of the type who eats the flesh. He eats the fetus. He, you know, kills them alive and eats them with everything going everywhere. The Jeffrey Dahmer types, you know, and Jeffrey Dahmer wanted to keep his victims, and thanks, I forget who told me this now, wanted to keep his victims inside him. He didn't want them to leave him, so it was kind of this mental thing, you know. But others, they, you know, you hear of people, you know, ancient warriors would eat the people who they killed on the battlefield to consume their power, their spirit, their warrior spirit. So you see this theme in shamanism as well. They eat the victim with, like, the kinema. They'll do this kind of stuff, and They're consuming the person's spirit. And so this theme runs in werewolfism, et cetera, and in cannibalism. So, you know, this is probably related to that in some way, probably why they're promoting this stuff. But so the werewolf is banished because they drink the blood, because that's what the Bible explains. They're banished from the group. They're sort of dead. They no longer exist. Whereas the werewolf, he goes by, they're allowed to eat anything as long as they drain the blood. And then he goes out and looks like they kill people. But again, this could also be the warrior spirit from the battlefield. They're out on the battlefield. They're in that frenzy of the fight and killing, and maybe get wrapped up in it and actually start eating someone. And they're wearing the let me see if I can find one of the examples here. I had them up on the screen here. Wearing some costume or whatever of, they are like this, of a wolf warrior, so to speak, right? So you get something like this going on. And, you know, then, it, you know, they're out there on the kill or whatever. So, you could see how it could go along with the lycanthropy and whatnot, but they're hiding themselves, or they're, it's, you know, to create additional fear in the victims of those whom they're fighting against. So this ties into Romulus. Romulus is the so-called founder of Rome, and he was fed by wolves. And I suspect that this story goes into the real story of the of what Fomenko is laying out. It's probably the story of the two brothers, one who creates Rome, and the other one is like Orthodoxy or whatever, you know, or Tartary or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised at all. But so, you know, here's another instance of the gods being, you know, tied to the wolves, just like I was talking about with Anubis. And let's see. It's going to get into shape-shifting, of course, and totemism, again, shamanism. That goes into the Epic of Gilgamesh. And, of course, vampires are also said to shape-shift. Then there's therianthropy, which is a form of sorcery. Both Anubis and Ra are tied to therianthropy. And then you have the skinwalker, which is somebody who puts on the skin or whatever of another, and it's a form of witchcraft. So, you know, it would be like, you know, something out of Silence of the Lambs, where they're actually doing this stuff, out of, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, where they're actually doing this stuff. It, you know, whenever you see them automatically flip the story and blame stupid Christians, question that, people, because, you know, you can see after a while when you go through all of these stories, you start to see the same pattern over and over, and it gets pretty ridiculous. Oh, thank you, Removing Zog, for the $50 donation. We'll be in touch with you, too. I'm the person who met Laura Huxley. And I've exposed the Huxleys. Thank you so much for that, and I really appreciate the support there. Also, hey, Caleb, you want to throw out your email for any support people want to give?
Yeah, sure. It's mick.caleb@gmail.com, and I have a PayPal. That's the PayPal link as well. Send me information, whatever.
Cool. So just getting back into this stuff, you know, and then I'll pass it back over to you here in a second. Let's see. So lycanthropy. Oh, goodness. I'll probably let you cover the moon stuff. You know, that ties into more. She-wolf, silver. The moon is related to silver, but I think you would possibly figure that out. I don't know. You were focused on that. Here's some of the other people that were involved in the trials of werewolfism and cannibalism. So, again, these stories of werewolves tend to coincide with cannibalism. In a town of Dole, France, a series of children went missing and were later found torn apart in the woods during the autumn of 1572. Timeline accounts vary. Townspeople were charged with finding the werewolf, responsible. In November, a hunting group witnessed a wild animal attack on a child, and someone recognized that the beast had features that resembled a local hermit, Giles Garnier. So, okay, and then it's going to go on. The children disappeared. Garnier with his wife were arrested. So he's a hermit, but he's got a wife. That's a contradiction right there. 50 witnesses tested against Garnier. Okay, that's a whole lot of witnesses, folks. And he was put on the rack. He confessed to hunting, killing, and eating children. Okay, so that's cannibalism. Okay, so, you know, that's, you know, that stuff does actually happen. It's, you know, we should first suspect that it actually did happen rather than the spin against it, especially with that many witnesses. In January 1573, Garnier was burned at the stake. Modern speculation is that Garnier was guilty of murder and cannibalism, as he found children easier to catch than wildlife. But the werewolf confession is attributed to either mental illness or torture. Okay, so we already talked about adrenochrome and Kuru. It looks like I accidentally doubled that up there, or maybe not. Children went missing, were later found torn apart in the woods. Oh, yeah, I guess it is. Anyway, whatever, I'll fix that later. So all of these guys are really the same thing, but some of these guys get a lot worse. One notorious wolf, and this is the Wolf of Ansbach case, the actual wolf, 1685, principally of Ansbach, part of the Roman Empire, now a district of Germany. A man-eating wolf preyed upon livestock and then moved on to eating people. Citizens thought they were being terrorized by a werewolf, who has their unnamed and hated former mayor of the guise of a wolf. The hunting party with dogs drove the wolf into a well where it was killed. Still believing it was a werewolf, the citizens chopped off the wolf's head, dressed it in a man's clothing. So this is an anthropomorphism rather than lycanthropy. Rather than turning the man into the wolf, they're turning the wolf into the man. This is what they're claiming here. Adding a human mask and hung the body from a pole. So is that true? You know, that's a bit strange, but, you know, what they always try to do is make the people look just crazy and stupid. Oh, they actually thought the wolf was a man, so they had to dress him up. Veslov of Polotsk. Let's see. Oh, you know what? I forgot to. Oh, no, I did. I didn't. Never mind. He was the ruler of the Polotsk, a region that is now part of Belarus, from 1044 to 1101. History records him as a strong warrior, but he's also said to be a sorcerer. So we have that tie in there as well. Sorcery is another, you know, way of saying witchcraft. And people, you know, when you start looking into that, as I've exposed for years, when you understand what it really is, it's not just hoodoo voodoo. It's not just make-believe. In Russian literature, he is called Veslov. Sorry, I'm not good at Russian names. I'm much better at Serbo-Croatian. Folk tales pegged him as a werewolf soon after his death, and his reputation was recorded in 12th century poem, The Tale of Igor's Campaign. It is the prince said to race from town to town as a wolf. So, goodness, how did all these get doubled up? I don't know what happened there.
Did you get the Gandion family in there?
Gandion. I'm not sure if I got the Gandion family.
So the Gandion family was in 1598. This was in France. Pierre, George, Antoinette, and Pierre René. I can't pronounce that, but French werewolves of St. Cloud in the Jura region, France, one of the major historical cases of lycanthropy. Perrinet believed that she was a wolf and one day in 1598 attacked two children who were picking strawberries. One of them, a four-year-old boy, defended his sister with a knife, but Perrinet wrenched the knife from his hand and gashed his throat. He died of the wound after communicating the news that the wolf had human hands. Perionet was found in the vicinity and torn to pieces by the enraged villagers. Antoinette confessed to being a werewolf and was also sleeping with the devil and had taken the form of the devil who had taken the form of a goat, attending a sabbat, ding, 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 and producing magical hailstorms. Her brother Pierre was also accused of making hailstones, luring children to a sabbat, turning himself into a wolf and killing and eating people. He stated that Satan clothed them as wolves and that they hunted on all fours. Pierre's son, George, also confessed to changing into a wolf by smearing himself with a salve and killing two goats. Antoinette, Pierre, George were all convicted as were wolves and burned in 1598. The presiding judge was Henri Beaujour, whose Discourse des Sorciers became a standard guide to witchcraft. So that was the last medieval reference that I had to werewolf attacks.
Yeah. But go ahead.
I was going to say, interestingly, when you look up a lot of these pictures, so I looked up some of these pictures, these wood cuttings that start to show up in and around these areas. And what you'll see here is a woodcut.
I just had that on screen.
Did you? Yeah. A woodcut by this guy, Lucas Carnac de Altier in 1512. This is an interesting character. He was a German Renaissance painter and printmaker and woodcut engraving. Let's see. So his portraits, both German princes for German princes and those leaders of the Protestant Reformation, again, who, and then this is also interesting. Wikipedia says he was a close friend of Martin Luther, which is also interesting at the time. But so the question that I have is, so you have all these stories popping up. People are fearing for their lives. The people are claiming to be wolves. I'm wondering if it's something deeper. Are they wearing these wolf costumes and spreading these wolf costumes as a deeper motif? Is there something to this? Where does the myth come from? And that's where the flamenco thing that Jan was just mentioning was fitting into the whole narrative for me. So the first thing that I'll read, just as a premise of what flamenco is really getting at when he's talking about the origin of some of these wolf stories. And if you think about it, a good way to think about it for me is, okay, so if you've ever seen old medieval TV shows or documentaries or movies, just envision Game of Thrones if you've seen it. They all have their banners. They have banners, you know, each one of these tribes or empires, whatever you want to call them, have banners. They carry these banners around. The Northmen have the head of the wolf on their banner. And it seems like there's a war. Okay, like fast forward a little bit to modern times. There's a war between the vampires and the werewolves. This is another interesting theme that pops up in pop culture movies, where there's a war between them. So, you know, we do this show about vampires, talking about vampires. Well, if they're both evil, wouldn't they be friends? Wouldn't they like work together? Or I guess a lot of times they do have them competing and sometimes they do work together. So what is that about? Well, so Flamenco in one of his books said something really interesting that made me realize, okay, there's something more to this. He said, throughout Christianity, the attitude toward the birth giver of God is particularly respectful. Obviously. However, in the rabbinical Judaic version, and also clearly apparent in the writings of the ancient authors like Titus Livy, who we get a lot of our history from, right? The Virgin Mary, as well as Christ, are on the contrary portrayed negatively. and I don't know how much people have looked into the Judaic rabbinic religious books, but you definitely see for sure a very negative portrayal of Christ, the Virgin Mary, etc. Mary was accused of fornication with a Roman soldier. They also allege she was raped. According to another version, a soldier secretly entered Mary's palace at night in the guise of her husband on the basis...
Yeah, because she wouldn't know her own husband, even in disguise.
Yeah, so these are all lies, obviously. But on the basis, Jesus was called a pitiful mamzer, a bastard, i.e. born to Mary and Joseph out of wedlock. As we discover further in Roman version by Titus Livy, the birth giver of God is described as a famous Roman she-wolf, the Capitoline wolf, and also as a promiscuous Laurentia cheating on her husband with strangers. Clearly, similarly, critical view of the Virgin Mary can be found in the works of other chronicles. The picture is clear. Many disputed the Christian idea of the Immaculate Conception and tried to belittle and to distort this motif, tirelessly conjecturing about the debauchery, a Roman soldier, the rape, all that stuff was comes out of the hatred for the other side of the Christian church. These Judaic rabbinic versions clearly are trying to portray the Virgin Mary as a she-wolf, okay? And I have a ton of grammar on this. Maybe I'll have time to read it.
And a she-wolf is another word for a prostitute, which I just had up on the screen.
Yeah, so they're calling her a she-wolf. Now, part of the wolf motif has to do with the fact that the northern, and by the way, another reference, if you look into the really old versions of the Bible, the Ostrog and the 1500s versions of the Bible, they're translated into Old Slavic. If you look into a lot of those texts, and you compare them to newer versions, they've taken out a ton of grammar. And some of the grammar that they've taken out was references to the north, snow, ice sheets, ice bridges across land, and all kinds of references. And if you go look at them, Famenko presents them all as primary sources. That's where I got them from. But what you see is, okay, so there's these northern tribes, possibly very intertwined with the wolves. The wolf was a big part of their culture, right? So not only that, but when you go and you look at a lot of the warriors for a lot of these, for the empire, particularly the elite warriors, would wear wolf and dog heads as they go into battle. And you can see that if you, here I'll just share some pictures here so people can get that idea. So you got these warriors wearing the wolf clothing, and these are the Slavs, all the Norse that I was talking about earlier.
And by the way, Slav is another word for slave. Who, those of you who don't get it, the enslaved North, this enslaved whites.
Exactly.
It was only black people.
So I'll just share this so people can see the pictures I'm describing. All right, so I talked about that picture. Okay, so the pictures Jan was, the groups Jan was talking about earlier with the man into a wolf, the Slavic and the Germanic, all the really old notions of men, warriors wearing these wolf skins. This is something that I think is very important in the whole big scheme of things when we're talking about werewolves. So what it looks like to me is these warriors that were all intertwined in the whole wolf paradigm were now all of a sudden in the 1500s, which, and this is all, if you're looking at the timeline from the new chronology that Famenko puts out, all this stuff was happening close to itself. It's not long, drawn out, huge spans of time. The Dark Ages didn't exist, you know, et cetera. But you'll see the false flag idea that I'm talking about, where, okay, they're blaming a whole group of people. And not only are the same group of people that they're talking about associated to wolves, but I believe that has something to do with the myths involved with, you know, the anti-wolf narrative, and blaming that whole group of people and the religious schism between the religious groups as well. I think that's a significant thing. Now, on top of that, Flamenco's got some interesting information on the medieval and the ancient literature mentions people with canine heads. We mentioned Anubis a little bit earlier. There is an enormous amount There's enormous amount of ancient artwork depicting such people. In Egypt in particular, people with canine heads were also portrayed in the old Orthodox icons. I've got a ton of pictures here, but they're just in black and white. I'm sure people have seen a lot of them. Saint Christopher, for instance. All of it is believed to be pure fantasy, like flying dragons and breathing fire without any root in reality whatsoever. Is it so? We are of the opinion that all of the legends and all of the artwork of this sort is based on reality. What we encounter is a medieval symbolism, which must have had a definite meaning in medieval Russia in particular. It is likely, although the issue doubtlessly requires deep research, that the dog symbolism represented the guards at the court of the Russian princes or the Khans or kings or some organization similar to the prince's guard. Okay, I won't read this whole thing, but I'll try to summarize this real quick. So you see a lot of these pictures. Marco Polo has pictures of this, and lots of medieval motifs with an anthropomorphic presentation of the dog head on top of a man, right? Well, just so happens that the elite army of the Cossacks were being portrayed in the anthropomorphic figures, because the people with canine heads were frequent characters of medieval European historical chronicles. For instance, the Czech Cossacks, the infantry men were known as the dog heads, and they had canine symbols on their banners. So this just goes and gives more. I got a ton more, but I don't have time to read all of it. But this is what I'm trying to get across, is that likely these old tribes had, in the north, had these banners of the dog and the wolf on their banner. This is a really important thing to them. So then you start to realize the whole reason why these the people are being portrayed negatively in this manner. These are the enemies of the new world order. This is the old world order of Tartary that we're talking about, and as opposed to the new Judaic rabbinic versions that are trying to portray the wolf in a completely negative way. Now, I think it's important to kind of go in just for a second. Jan, if you have something to add, you can, because I was going to kind of go a little bit deeper into the idea of the wolf and how the Mother Mary was portrayed as a wolf. And then you can see Romulus and Remus, who is probably John the Baptist and Jesus, being portrayed as Romulus and Remus, and how that whole dynamic can be understood.
Why don't you just dig into that, since you already started it? So go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So,
I just want to say, people in the audience, you know, keep it on topic. We know who's behind most of this stuff. You don't have to post it up in every single post and stuff in your comments. Just, you know, try to use your brain and be, considerate, and try not to get the channel shut down. You know, this is already walking a thin line. So just try to use your heads. Thanks.
All right, so the Virgin Mary, the mother of Christ, is an ancient Romulus described by Titus Livy as Laurentia, a woman by the name of She-Wolf. The infant's Romulus, partially Christ, and Remus partially John the Baptist. When he says partially, if you read the grammar, he goes into why a lot of historians have confused the stories. There's a translation issues, and there's also deliberate cover-ups and splicing of different people. So it would be harder for us to put the pieces together to figure all this stuff out, which is why I'm so thankful that Fomenko has got so much of this grammar. Having happily escaped death, despite the order of the evil king, live alone, secluded from the rest of the world, suckled by a she-wolf. Sometime later, a certain shepherd finds the rescues Romulus and Remus. Titus Livy communicates the opinion of the ancient authors that the she-wolf was in fact a woman. A shepherd brought the children home and let his wife Laurentia raise them up. Others think that Laurentia was called a she-wolf amongst the shepherds. A historian, Sextus Aurelius Victor, says that the twins were given to a woman, Acca Laurentia, and this woman was called a she-wolf for selling her body. Thus are called the women who sell themselves for profit. That is why a place where they live is called Lupanar. Baby Jesus, aka Romulus, was but of course suckled not by a she-wolf, but by a woman, Mary, his mother. Only the later authors began to be confused in the description of the biblical events. Why was the story of the she-wolf suckling the infant Romulus and Remus so popular? The she-wolf with two infants even became, in a sense, a symbol of ancient Rome. In the book, in a previous book, we have analyzed a famous ancient story king, Aeneas, carries out on his back his father, Anchises, holding a relic, and leads his son to Acaeneus, by the hand of a burning Troy. Wait, by the hand from burning Troy. His wife, Creasa, sorry, my characters, my ancient Roman characters need work. His wife, Creasa, is walking by Aeneas' side. In fact, this is a vague reflection of the biblical flight into Egypt of Joseph with his wife, Mary, and the baby Jesus. Notably, Jesus and Mary were traveling on a donkey's back. It appears that later writers called Mary, mother of God, Anchises. A man, Joseph, was recast as a woman. Remember, these guys are trying to cover their tracks. These Judaizers who rewrote the history are trying to make it difficult for us to figure this stuff out. So think in that context a little bit. The biblical donkey was renamed Aeneas. At the total number of the characters was left unchanged. There were four of them originally, and four of them remained, but the writers mistakenly mixed up their names. The most ancient Roman story of the Capitoline wolf, i.e. a woman called Laurentia, her husband and the two babies, Romulus and Remus, is another distorted version of the same biblical story of the flight into Egypt by Mother Mary and Jesus traveling on a donkey's back, except that the biblical donkey was transferred under Titus Livy's pen into a Roman she-wolf. The later ancient authors heatedly discuss the reason a woman, Laurentia, i.e. a virgin Mary, as we understand now, was called a she-wolf. They purported that Latin lupa means she-wolf, and in common parlance, it also means a whore, meaning a woman who, according to Titus Livy, gave herself to anyone. However, it is possible that the Latin lupa originated in the Slavic lipo, lipil, liubo, meaning beautiful. So we already have, we see a lost in translation, meaning that they're trying to portray her as this she-wolf, right? This negative meaning. And realistically, the whole time, the word was probably translated in the original as beautiful. Then everything becomes clear. The Mother Mary was called beautiful, Lepaia, Lepo. Later, when the core of this matter was forgotten, the ancient authors of the 16th and 17th century tendentiously changed the respectful Slavonic Lepaia, Lepo into Latin, a she-wolf, a whore, after which they began to seriously analyze and transform of a woman into a she-wolf. The the fact that in Russian, the word lepo, if read backwards from right to left, as do the Arabs and Jews, for example, could have been confused with the word lechery and could have led one to believe that the subject they referred to as wanton or immortal woman could have played its part in the cunning blackening of the woman's reputation. So we see motive. We have the smoking gun here of how this story changes from a beautiful woman into a she-wolf. However, I think it's important just to know this, that the story of the she-wolf pops up even on the Wikipedia page of the werewolf in the story of Romulus and Remus. And it's very interesting that it could possibly, according to Fomenko, be a cover-up story about how the founders of Rome, Romulus and Remus, were actually Jesus and John the Baptist. That would be another attack on Christianity and a similar repetition of the same thing that we've been talking about with the rest of the vampire shows and the witchcraft shows at all. And I got a lot more on that, but I think people get the point.
Yeah, keep it on topic in the chat, folks. You're off topic. They're going into Mormonism and everything else, but talking about what we're discussing today, which is werewolves and the ties to witchcraft and everything else. So activist news, keep it on topic. If you keep going off topic, let's see. No disrespect intended. Anyway, you're disrespecting and you're wasting everybody's time here, so you're going on timeout. Bye-bye. So anyway, we've discussed how all of the books, if you think that you are intelligent because you didn't read something and therefore you're smarter than everybody else who read it and it has nothing of value because you took one quote out of somewhere else and you think you can debunk something else that you haven't read from one quote from something else, that's very limited, narrow-minded thinking. At least have the intelligence to go in and read things. You can go through and take what's of value without throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We don't go into MKUltra research and read all of these, agent books, Leary's books, J. Stevens et al., and, believe them wholeheartedly. We go in there and analyze the works and understand what they have to offer before we just dismiss them and say, Masons! It's just like, it's a childish response. You got to have critical thinking. So, keep it on topic in the chat there. We use the chat for, furthering the show on topic and, to see what people have to offer as far as questions and stuff to keep the show going. So we're at an hour in. I'm sure we have more to go through here. Let's see. I'm sure I had more here. Oh, I did. I wanted to get into, a lot of the plants and things like that, they have, you when you go through all of these stories, and thanks to Tatiana in Serbia for finding this information. She's from Pančevo, where I've been many times. But let's see. So many ways to become a werewolf. I think Jacob had this on screen earlier. But some of the ways are bitten by another wolf, being scratched or clawed by another werewolf, selling your soul to the devil, wearing an enchanted belt made of wolfskin fur known as a wolf belt, applying magic salve. So we talked about the salve, black magic and witchcraft. So they're tied together. Eating lycanthropous flowers, a white and yellow flowers said to be in the Balkans. And, of course, Serbia is in the Balkans, where a lot of the stuff on vampirism and lycanthropy comes from. Inhaling certain potions, simply wearing an animal's pelt, packing a real wolf pelt on one's body, and then drinking beer mixed with blood. So there's the blood reference. Drinking from a wolf's paw print, eating the brains of a wolf, spells and rituals, having sex with a werewolf, eating an unborn fetus, which was accused of Peter Stump, And let's see, wearing the belt made of the skin of an executed criminal, being cursed by a witch or troll, being born on Christmas Eve. Well, my grandmother was born on Christmas Eve, and she wasn't a werewolf. Let's see, being blasphemous or getting cursed for your sins, genetics, having a werewolf in your family, drinking from a lycanthropous stream, drinking downstream from werewolves, sleeping on a Friday night under the full moon, shining directly on your face, being the seventh son. Interesting. So the seventh son of the seventh son, seven generations. Being a child conceived under the new moon, not going to confession for 10 years, being gruesomely murdered on a full moon, being born on a full moon Friday, tasting human flesh. There we go. There it is. Tasting human flesh. Being chosen by a Native American wolf spirit. That's a bit foo-foo there, probably. Let's see here. So we already kind of went into this. This is more on how to become a werewolf. They, you know, talk about Zeus here and Lycaon. That's probably where the Lycaon, that's probably where the underground group comes, gets their name to, wolf. Herbs and potions, fairly common to become a werewolf, usually contains wolf's bane, a highly poisonous to humans. You know, again, people, you know, all you young hippies and everything out there, you know, we were into all of that stuff at one time. It's all stupid, you know. We're not telling you go out and eat this stuff and try to become a werewolf. You know, for you idiots out there who actually try this stuff at home, don't. So, you know, just, you know, you don't need to do this stuff. We're trying to expose it so that it can't be used against us, not to encourage your behavior in it. Let's see, small amount of powdered silver and other herbs, a potion either drank or rubbed on the skin, yada yada, demonic pact, be born as one, wolf eating human meat, water touched by a werewolf, lycanthropous flowers. So again, the similar themes of the same, you know, the parvo virus. So that's a dog virus, parvo. Anyway, at least I think it was. That's what I always knew when I, you know, grew up in a around veterinarians. Let's see here. Animagus potion. And this is on a Harry Potter wiki. And, you know, use a transform will at any time. Person to brew a potion cannot be bought from someone else. Brewing it involves including a piece of one's own hair. A lot of these potions use mandrake, which we're going to go into it in just a second. I've covered mandrake in the past. So there's all these recipes out there that these people promote. Here's another one. Potions and lycanthropy. This guy is a Satanist and thinks he's pretty cool. Magical fantasy adventure. So how to turn yourself into a werewolf. You know, probably people that drink this stuff or whatever get sick or could potentially kill themselves or, you know, what have you. But, you know, try to avoid being stupid and falling into the left-hand path stuff. We're just bringing attention again to it. So here's alchemist-trained sorcery can create a lycanthropy potion. So that's like a salve, a potion made from when the moon is unobscured and high in the sky. Lunar eclipse must be most potent of all. So there's another moon tie-in. Here we get into mandrake. I almost wrote a book on mandrake at one point. I figured, you know, after I did a bunch of research on it, that everything that, or just about everything that has to be said on it is already published in this one guy, Thompson, in his book, I think was his name. But, you know, so interestingly, mandrake is supposed to be pulled up by a chained dog who is chained to it because the plant is said to shriek and will blind and kill anybody or deafen and kill anybody around who hears the shriek. So that way it just, you know, kills the dog instead. So interesting tie-in to the dog there. Toxicity, alkaloids, tropane alkaloids. And I believe it contains scopolamine, which, you know, literally makes you go crazy, causes convulsions, melancholy, mania. Let's see, said to excite delirium and madness. Okay, so not exactly stuff that you want to get into in the Bible. It does talk about this in Genesis and in Song of Songs. Rachel and Leah and the whole story of Mandrake there. It's also Mandragora, etc. But so atropine, you know, blurry vision, dilated pupils, dryness of the mouth, difficulty urinating, dizziness, headache, vomiting, blushed, rapid heart rate or tachycardia, hallucinations, etc. So anyway, not good stuff.
People are saying that the stream is dropping, happened 5 times in the last minute. The stream is strobing in and out.
All right. Not sure what's going on there. Sorry, folks. Oh, shit, it is down. Let's see. It shows that it's up on our side. Is it down on your side totally?
Not on my side, but...
Yeah,
it's... Yeah, some people are saying it's fine now.
It is fine now. It's totally down on my side. Sheesh.
Yeah, stream good for... Yeah, people are saying it's fine.
All right, well, I'll just keep going, and I can't even see the chat now, unfortunately. That's a bummer. I wonder what happened there. So, anyway, I'll see if I can find a way to get back in there.
Yeah, people are saying it's fine.
All right. Good grief, man. I wonder what happened. So, mine is not up. Thank you for the super chat there, whomever posted that. That was PS Massage. Thank you so much for the support. Anyway, going back to this, I cannot see it, so I'll just have to go by what the audience says on all of this. Oh, goodness. What was this here? Oh, this was Lysion. We already covered that earlier. Let me just get back to the Mandrake here. So that's the Mandrake apple. Don't go out eating this stuff, folks. You know, just because you saw it in Harry Potter, you think it's cool or you think it's cheek to be, a Satanist or whatever and just do the opposite, you know, just to be cool like all the Satanists do. Anyway, plenty there about Mandrake and its ties to it. Ambrosia is another one that pops up, and it's possibly blood, which would tie into vampirism as well, and what we covered last week, and distributed by a nymph labeled with that name in the myth of Lycurgus. Okay, so there's the name of a wolf again, or Lyc, like lycanthropy. Forbade the cult of Dionysus, whom he drove to Thrace and was driven mad by the god. In his fit of insanity, he killed his son, whom he mistook as a stock of mature ivy, and the nymph Ambrosia, and transformed into the grapevine. But interesting that name there, because Lyc, the root there would be like lycanthropy or wolf. So here's another one that Tatiana sent from I almost said Yugoslavia, from Serbia. I'm not going to read all of this right now, but there's a lot of good stuff. Blackberry, let's see, plenty of blackberries, adopted wild stories, belief in natural that they should become very popular, deepest root.
I think we're down.
We're down. We're off.
There's about.
All right. Relaunched it. Let's see if that works and fixes it. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there. It says we're live over here. I don't know what the heck, man.
I just refreshed mine and it shows we're live. So I think that worked.
Grief, man. You're not supposed to talk about this, I guess.
Yeah. That's crazy. I tried refreshing it and it said it was just completely dark.
I can't even get the show up. You know, I'm not seeing us live up there at all. Let me see if an
video
Eric,
playback is interrupted.
You just lost it as well.
Yep. It keeps I don't know. There's a lot of people saying it works and some saying that it doesn't. So I guess we could just keep going if people are saying it's still working.
I can't see anything, so we're going to have to rely on them to tell us.
We'll upload it later.
Well, why don't you take over for a minute and I'll, you know, because I'm probably going to have to close this browser, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I belong in the kitchen, says she hears us still. So we'll just keep going and we'll put it up for people who lost it. You can come back and look at the...
Well, I better start recording from this side in case we lost it all. Shoot, man.
Okay, so one interesting thing that along those lines for me, I don't even like mentioning this, honestly. I'm not even going to give out the actual website, but there is a Church of Satan website that you can actually go on, and there's a whole... I mean, when I saw this, I just wanted to throw up. I felt dirty just looking at it. It's like how to become a werewolf. And they give you this whole ritual that you can perform. And it shows like a whole thing about all the benefits of becoming a werewolf and how you can gain all this power physically and emotionally. And part of it, you had to, like, you know, you're sitting in a circle with an animal costume while you're playing with yourself.
Good grief.
It's horrible. But
is YouTube down?
I don't know. There's people still saying that, like, there's still people saying that it's working, and there's some saying that I see you behind the black screen.
I see you behind the black screen.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It looks like YouTube is definitely
acting up.
Yeah, it's definitely YouTube. For sure.
Well, it shows we're still streaming. Well, I'm recording this on our side, so if it goes down, I'll just upload it. So just keep going. Sorry, folks. I cannot see the chat or anything at all up there to see if anybody is still there. You can still see people?
It's not. I can see the chat. The chat's working great. But I have the chat popped out into a whole nother window. But the YouTube is not working at all on, not just on our stream for me.
Oh, wow. I'm getting an internal server error off of YouTube.
Yeah. You know what that means? They're trying to shut it down. Shut it down. All right. Well, we'll just keep going. So let's see what else here. What else did I want to talk about here besides that stupid website? So yeah, they're actually promoting this stuff. Today, like, open and freely, that you could go become a werewolf if you do these specific things. It could just be, I don't know, who knows what it is, if it's on the Church of Satan website. But anyways, there's also some interesting things that I found within the mythology. I wanted to talk just a second about the moon. Okay, so references to the moon and the werewolf, nothing really surprising to a lot of people. The moon is, obviously wolves howl at the moon. That's not a secret. Everybody kind of knows that the moon has some sort of effect on people psychologically. It probably has a lot to do with hormones.
Well, since we know women's moonstrol or menstrual cycles.
Yep, the menstrual cycle. So we can also observe a lot of things in nature, even with animals, a lot of different hormonal things with animals and lots of behavior that happens with the moon. So the moon is also represented as...
Somebody just sent me a message. It is streaming, so okay.
Okay. So some people are still getting it and some aren't. I don't know. That's right. Weird. So the moon is also associated, obviously, with the darkness of the night, which is, you know, another, you know, and in October you get the harvest moon, and it, the moon is obviously a big deal to the ancient calendar, the quote unquote ancient calendar. It used to be a moon cycle. We still use the word moon for month. That's the etymology of the word month is month. And we used to be very, our calendar used to be very intertwined within the the moon calendar. There's also interesting things if you start to look into, you know, and I don't know if I can confirm or deny some of these claims, but various people have made the claims that a lot of rituals happen on moon, around the moon, the full moon, and specifically like, you know, there's the Samhain, ancient rituals of the Celts and a lot of the harvest moon. Everybody in the ancient times would start to harvest right about now. You'd start to see the death of the trees, you know, the whole astro theology side of it, where you start to notice, you know, that the seasons and the zodiac have a certain relationships. There's also silver is the element of the moon in occult. What is that? I forgot what book I read that in. But what is it called? They were working with transmutation of elements and whatnot. Anyways, the silver is associated with the moon. That's probably where the silver bullet comes from. Some people speculate that the silver has something to do with colloidal silver. Jan found something about how they say that powdered silver can actually turn you into a werewolf, which was
right. Well, it was mixed with mandrake.
Yeah. So, however, the moon, the whole silver bullet thing is likely just a reference to the silver associated with the moon. Other than that, yeah. People have said that a lot of people have died. Very famous people are choosing when to have cesarean sections and when they're choosing to be, you know, put to death are specifically on moon cycles and sun cycles and specific dates for some sort of, you know, afterlife, kind of like stuff that was written about in the Egyptian Book of Dead, possibly there's a connection that people have figured out over the, you know, years that has something to do with the afterlife. So that's where a lot of the myths come from, at least. But let's see what else we got here. Anything else I wanted to mention here? Yeah, there's a ton of stuff I can go into on a little bit more on the myth side of it. Let's see here. Okay, a little bit more on the history. A werewolf in folklore and mythology is a person who shapeshifts into a wolf, either purposely or by using magic or after being placed under a curse. The medieval chronicle Gervase of Tilbury associated the transformation with the appearance of the full moon. But this concept was rarely associated with the werewolf until the idea was picked up from a modern fiction writer. Okay, so that's kind of a newer thing. That wasn't really a super old thing. Most modern references agree that a werewolf can be killed if shot by a silver bullet, although this is more of a reflection of fiction's influence than on an authentic feature of folk legend. A werewolf allegedly can be killed by complete destruction of the heart and brain. Silver isn't necessary. Many European countries and cultures have stories of werewolves, including France, Greece, Spain, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, Serbia, Russia, Ukraine, Croatia, Poland, Romania, Scotland, England, Ireland, Germany, Denmark, Galicia, Norway, Portugal, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Andorra. Argentina even has one called the Lobizon Hombre Lobo, and Italian Lupo Manaro. In Northern Europe, there is also
Can you still see the chat? Are we still going?
Actually, let me check. Yeah, it looks like the chat's still going.
I still can't get in there, so. What are they saying?
Let's see, it looks like I Belong in the Kitchen says she still sees the chat and the...
All right, just yeah, let's just keep going. Yeah. We're going to have to wrap it up here in a few minutes since, you know, I can't tell what's going on or anything. I, you know, everything else is working but that, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Cool. Anything you wanted to get in before the...
Well, I've covered most of my notes, so let's see.
I'm just not... I just would like to say that I'm not saying that people can actually shapeshift into wolves. You know, I'm not jumping to that conclusion. Correct. That people, there are actually, you know, wolf people running around. Kind of like my premise that I'm starting to understand here is that some of these myths of these various, you know, characters that we are celebrating around Halloween have these ties, these older ties. And that's why I was trying to bring up a lot of stuff that you haven't already heard. A lot of people have already heard a lot of where the myths were based. And I think it's interesting that there are, you know, there are roots within the myths that probably have some sort of a deep history within us, that, you know, comes from somewhere. There's, it's grounded, it's founded. And I think that's what's important to understand about this is that we were probably, one thing that needs to be said is we were probably at some point scared of wolves. You know, if we lived in a village and a wolf attack and we heard of a wolf attack, if that ever happened.
They not only that, but they could kill your livestock, your chickens, mm-hmm. your sheep, your cattle, whatever, you mm-hmm. know, kill your children. So, you know, there would be a good reason to fear wolves in my opinion.
Oh, perfectly good reason. And we know that our fears, a lot of our fears are based on survival. People will have nightmares and you'll be being chased by a werewolf or whatever, you know, a monster, whatever. A lot of those are founded in probably in our survival mechanism that gets passed on through our DNA because of our ancestors' past. You know, it's there for a reason. But I think one of the things that needs to be said is some of the, like when I mentioned the whole false flag idea, a lot of the fear that gets put into the noosphere or the memosphere is heavily put out there at this time, right about this time when nature itself is starting to die, all the leaves are starting to die. And here gets inserted all this, you know, extra fear porn. And it becomes a festival of fear, and that can be a dangerous thing. And that's why we're discussing a lot of these notions, so that people maybe take away some of their fears that can control us. Well, I wonder if it's just the business as usual, where all the horror movies and everything is just kind of a continuation of some of these false flags that might have happened in the past in order to cause mass hysteria. You know, have you ever thought maybe some of these people putting on these costumes, going out and killing people, putting it in the newspapers and then the hangings and everything, if that wasn't to induce fear and mass hysteria in the populace in order to gain control for political.
It would be just like the British and the Puritans at Salem used the French and Indians as fear porn, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So now, but I think it's very interesting now that we have direct ties to the Salem, the witch trials, not only just the Salem witch trials, but a lot of the witch trials that happened all over, even in Europe and et cetera. But also the werewolf stories. And now we've got really similar historically based myths that are intertwined within the same context of the hallucinogens, the subversion of
suggestogens. We got to stop using their words, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'll work on that.
I do it too, and I created the word suggestogen, and it drives me crazy that I still use their words.
Yep.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh well, yeah. No, I think that's just about all I had on werewolves to say.
Yeah, so, you know, just tying it all back together, we showed the history of Salem and the witchcraft trials and all of that, and how that stuff was real, and how they've twisted it and covered it all up to blame the Christians. They've done the same thing with vampirism. It's just those crazy Christians. People didn't actually do human sacrifices and drink human blood. It wasn't a specific Jewish element behind these things, when we know now that it was. And this stuff didn't go on with werewolves and with putting these, you know, wolf skins and whatnot on, and then going out and, you know, as a thing for war, as a thing to create fear for social cohesion within a town or tribe or group or what have you. There's a lot of reasons why this may have been done. It could have just been your simple out of your mind Jeffrey Dahmer types, you know, and, you know, just because most people are good people, you can't assume that the most evil people don't exist. Just because you're a good person doesn't mean that someone equally as bad as you isn't out there and isn't capable of doing all of this stuff. You know, so when we read these old stories, if we stop going, well, it was just, you know, the Christians made it all up because they're Christians, so we're going to ignore the 52, you know, testimonies and the admission of murder and, the court records and everything else. We're just going to ignore all of that and just say crazy Christians. I mean, you know, that's just an oversimplified dismissal of any evidence and any, you know, critical thinking. So we have to avoid fallacious arguments like that. For the show tonight, if it didn't get recorded all the way through, I did record it, so I'll have to repost it if it didn't work. But hopefully it did. People still are saying that it's up there, so who knows what's going on. But anyway, I guess that's a wrap for us tonight. It's about usual shutdown time anyway, so I think that's it. Thank you for everyone who supported. Thank you if you were able to put up a super chat. I wasn't able to see any of those, so sorry if I missed your comments and super chats. Please also support the show at logosmedia.com. Hit the contribute button up at the top. Also, you can hit the Patreon button there at the top of the video, so that you can support us that way. That's a big help. Also, please subscribe and like the show and tell your friends about us so that we can continue to grow. Next week's show will be the 10-year anniversary show, I think.
Woo!
Woo! Wow. So I think the first show was on October 28th. 2008. We could do like the week after next is the 10th anniversary show for Hallows Eve. I think that's sound. That's a bit satanic. I don't know if I want to be associated with that specific night. I don't know. I'll think about it. We'll have to do something exposing the Satanists before we, you know, or for that kind of show.
We could turn it upside down and invert it and turn it into something.
Invert their inversion.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could do it. Maybe we could do an episode exposing the Church of Satan and their one celebrated day a year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you why you shouldn't be taking your kids out for Halloween in costumes and this, this mock ritual that celebrates the murder of 70 million Europeans back in the Black Death days, committed by the crypto Jews, and they were accused for all of that, and then fled to the New World and elsewhere to get away from the aftermath and those who were angry at them for doing it. Again, please support the show, logosmedia.com. Please hit the like, subscribe, etc. Hit the super chat. Hit the Patreon button. Caleb, what's your donation information?
mick.caleb@gmail.com. And thank you so much. I appreciate everything. It really helps out a bunch.
All right. And that's a wrap, folks. Good night. Thank you so much. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Night, everybody.